Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is Dr. Lee Merengoff of the Political Science Department at Marist College, and director of Marist Institute of Public Opinion, or the well-known Marist Poll. It's been a while, Lee. You're the best friend we've ever had here at WAMC, and we love you. Thanks for being with us.
Hey, always, always my pleasure. If I would only turn you down for a Yankee game or a Giant football game. Other than that, you're in.
And when you do that, would you take a knee?
That's why I like to talk to you. You know, you're right off the starting blocks, as it were.
Have you done any polling on this whole racial divide based on the NFL?
We're in the process of doing that. We have done some work on recently on the broader issues of racism and the like, and you know, the Trump administration is changing what is seen as acceptable as dialogue. And clearly it's creating both, an acceptability and also a resistance. And so we're seeing that people think that when Trump talks about things like race, that it matters, and it's made it more acceptable to talk about things that could be seen as, you know, racially divided. So yes, it has mattered.
And on both sides, I mean, it was considered very bad form for journalists to call anybody a liar. now you call them a liar every day. At least I do.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, we're into, you know, fake news, fake polls and everything. And we are both of the age where we remember when presidents were thought not to lie. And then we experienced things like Vietnam and Watergate. And after that, we kind of got into a period where we hardly think the truth is ever coming our way, and we have polled on these issues, and you know, I don't know if it's a shock, but the notion that we're not getting a straight response on almost everything is certainly not a revelation, but a truism nonetheless. And so yes, we've entered a whole new world of communication, if I call it that. And obviously the media and the pollsters, both of our, you know, the professions that we hold near and dear, you know, have taken quite a hammering, as has other institutions. I mean, no one has escaped this at the moment.
Okay, so let me get into some substance with you. I know you've done a lot of polling. And by the way, congratulations. I understand that the guys who work for us, allegedly, National Public Radio, have hired you as an associate of theirs to do their polling.
Yeah, we're very excited about it. We're continuing to do our state polls with NBC and the Wall Street Journal. But when it comes to our national polls, like the ones we're talking about now, we're forming a partnership, a collaboration with NPR, National Public Radio, and the PBS NewsHour with Judy Woodruff. And if folks are seeing Marist polls or hearing about the Marist polls, that's why. And we're doing a lot of national polls. We have an issue a day or an issue an hour. I mean, I'm not sure the news cycle is even at this point a cycle. It seems to be one continuous event that has been going on. And, you know, in a sense that has made a lot of people more alert to what's going on and plugged into that. And I think we're seeing it in, you know, responses to polls. People have opinions and they want to share them. And so I think that this is where things are right now. It's a very hyper-polarized environment. You don't need
polarized,
me to tell
you that. Polarized.
I can't. I spell that differently than most people, I bet.
But,
I think it is really telling. We're both in the classroom business, and you talk to college kids, and you know, this is a whole new world for them because they don't have a point of reflection historically necessarily. And, you know, they may have lived through President Obama and now this, and it's so different for so many of them.
Yeah. One thing I did want to mention very quickly, and then I want to get into some of the substantive polls, but it has come to my attention that you have a very good blog right now. You have your own sort of radio show that anybody can access.
Yeah. We've gotten into the podcast world. We are putting together pretty much a weekly podcast. Myself, Barbara Carvalho, who directs the national poll, Jay DeDapper, who has been for many years at WNBC as a political journalist. We call it Poll Hub, and we discuss all things polling, and that takes us right into every topic we've talked about so far, from racism to football to the president and anything else. And we try to talk a little bit about what makes good polls and bad polls, and we're encouraging people who are interested in that sort of thing to subscribe. And you can do that by going to the MaristPoll.com. Check one of the podcasts there, and we've done 10 of these already. It seems like, seems like only a couple, but we've done a whole bunch. And then you can subscribe, and then you're going to know when we do the next one. So we're very excited about it.
Okay, let me start by asking you the obvious question. Is Donald Trump getting more or less popular as his presidency progresses?
You know, what's interesting is that his numbers seem stuck, and for lack of a better word, he is at, you know, the lowest point of any president in, you know, political history of polling at this point in his time. So, you know, his numbers are sort of 30-something. You know, he didn't have long to fall because he didn't get that big a popular vote, you know, as a plurality of the vote. So it's not like he started with 62 and is now down to the mid to upper 30s. But certainly when we look at his approval rating nationally, and even worse in New York, but nationally, we're seeing it reflect the tone of what he's established. In other words, he has not tried to reach out. Most presidents start with a little honeymoon period. There was no honeymoon in this. He's not tried to reach out. He's been pitching everything to his base, from the people he's surrounded himself with to the executive orders he's rescinded or passed, depending upon what the action was, to sort of undo things that Barack Obama did, to a few legislative attempts, which some of which have come up short, as we know, with health care. And all these things reflect his pitching it to his core. People who voted for him, who liked him, not just didn't like Hillary Clinton, and also, you know, white evangelicals and Tea Party people, the core of the Republican Party, who he says, you know, famously, if he went down Fifth Avenue and shot someone, they would still support him. And I think in some degrees that's who's behind him right now.
Let's talk about Governor Andrew Cuomo. Get that out of the way. is he doing better, or is he staying the same? My impression is he's gaining a little.
A little bit. Well, I think he's up to the tempo in terms of some of the visibility. That, you know, he's been a little bit more present. I think he's accomplished a lot on his you know, his to-do list. You know, over the entirety of his administration, I mean, he can point to a record of achievement. And certainly in politics, you have to beat somebody with somebody, and there doesn't appear right now to be anybody who has either the money or the recognition to give a serious run for the governorship to deprive Cuomo of a third term. But then the question is, does he really want to do that? And you probably have better insight than I on that question. But I don't think it's a slam dunk that he necessarily seeks a third term if he's looking to do something in the presidential sphere. Maybe he doesn't. He has nothing to gain by winning again, but maybe some things to lose because he might not run it strong. But, you know, something to be considered, whether he wants, in fact, to try what his father ultimately didn't try to do.
Does the bear walk in the woods? He's running for governor and he's running for president.
You can do both, you think. You would guess, you're thinking it's a twofer for him.
I would put the Shartok family jewels on the fact that he's running for governor and that he's going to run for president. And that he is running for president, and I think he's in a good situation because, you know, as we all know, Donald Trump in New York State is in a very precarious situation. He may be a Queens product, but people hate him.
Yeah. Well, yeah. His approval rating. You know, we can talk about how his approval rating nationally is sort of, you know, basement level. But if you want to look at New York, not surprisingly, a very, very blue state is going to be even more difficult for Trump. You know, even upstate New York, he gets in the high 30s, upstate probably more resembling the country as a whole. But if you work in the New York City suburbs and the suburbs, and New York City itself, his approval rating is around 30% in New York, which is sort of, you know, record-breaking in its low numbers. And what I find interesting is that when you break that down and you drill that down, you see that only 13% in New York think he's doing an excellent job, but a full 50% say he's doing a poor job. And even nationally, although the numbers are not that pulled, that separate, that different, they're still much more on the poor side than on the excellent side. So, you know, that's why I say when you first asked me about Donald Trump, you know, how's he doing? The answer was he's stuck. I mean, the numbers aren't moving much at all in either direction. And, you know, the people who are booing are escalating that, and the people who are applauding are escalating their feelings, and we're getting pulled more apart. And then we talk about this other fella from Queens, and my instincts are like yours. I'm not sure about the first part, about whether he runs for re-election as governor. I know there's an argument to be said that helps your fundraising and things of that sort. But I'm not sure he has anything to prove with that, but I think he's nationalized his comments, and certainly is, you know, if he hasn't in his own mind settled on running, I think he's probably pretty close to it.
If in fact he doesn't run, it would confound me, because, you know, part of his whole psyche is competing not only for himself and politically, but with his father. I mean, yeah. He's trying to do what his father couldn't do. I have no doubt about that. So I want to know, by the way, whether he's in a situation now where a potential trial of his old buddies who got into themselves into real trouble, one of whom is bribery, and one of whom who has already pled guilty, whether that is, there's any indication that people have their eye on that.
Well, no, nationally, no, because, you know, clearly what you need is someone who's running against him to point that out repeatedly. I'm not sure we're going to hear that in what it's likely to be a crowded Democratic field. I don't think that will become as much an issue as it might in a general election. But, I don't think Andrew Cuomo is particularly shy, and I suspect he will have a response that will make you regret asking the question at some point. I don't really think that's obviously it's a blight on him and his team. I think with what's going on nationally and the problems with forgetting about the policies, but the personnel and the issues that have involved around Donald Trump, it's just astounding. The number of times I've read the article that this could be in violation of such and such, this could be in violation of such and such, he is breaking the law with such and such. I mean, it's like almost a daily occurrence, you know, from the emoluments clause to possible obstruction of justice. I increasingly, you know, talking to friends who are lawyers and saying, well, what do you think the bottom line in all this is? You know, you start talking about pardons and the whole, like, I mean, I think we're heading into an even rockier period, if that's possible, than what we've already experienced at Washington. So I guess that's a long answer to say I suspect Andrew Cuomo will, you know, unhappily live with that and hopefully wrap it up before he becomes a candidate, if that's what he does.
So how's the state legislature doing poll-wise?
Well, you know, they had a better year, I guess, than they've had. And, you know, they're held in the low esteem, but the numbers came up about 5 to 10 points from what we've had in the past. So they were sort of, you know, during the trials and the leaders and, you know, the constant, bad news that was coming out of the chambers. They were in the low 20s, and now you know, the Senate and the Assembly are pretty much around 30%. So the numbers are low. They're better than Congress in Washington, but they're nothing to write home about.
So, Lee Merengoff, we have a long list of things that are troubling people. But how about health care? How does that come out in your polling? How concerned are people?
Very concerned. And there was no doubt that this recent period of, you know, the repeal and replace discussions that have been going on in the critically close votes in Washington and the resistance to, you know, undoing a lot of what Barack Obama had accomplished in this regard, that really has gotten people's attention. And I think the it was quite amazing to see, you know, from one perspective, you know, Donald Trump is as a hero for some people. For other people, he's as bad as it could get. But what it does in both sides, it really mobilizes people to react. And I think we saw when the action was to repeal and replace, it was never a positive in the polls. In other words, when you look at what public opinion is on health care, people are very concerned about the issue and, oddly enough, are much more supportive of Obamacare keeping it and expanding it or even moving in the direction of the single-payer public option programs, which really has never gotten a full airing in Congress, has been talked about, but never really has been considered. People are much more in that mindset than they are in terms of let's undo it all. Let's just go back and not do it. And I must say, in those votes in the Senate, particularly the one with McCain, you know, coming in at the last minute. I mean, those reminded me of votes, you know, way back in the 60s and the 70s during civil rights period in Vietnam. They were dramatic and things that people felt they had a real stake in. And I think that's what we saw in the area of healthcare. And clearly, from a political standpoint, it's really, really bad news on the Republican side for something that they have talked about for 7 years. And the president has said this, you know, this has been something you've been talking about. And, you know, you got into power, you own it, and you couldn't do anything about it. So it's a really blight on the ability of the Republicans in the Senate and the House and the White House to put forth some kind of proposal that would have gotten bipartisan support and could have moved things in a direction that the public really wants, because they want to improve upon Obamacare in an expansive way, not in a reducing way. And that's not the direction of where Washington is right now at all.
Okay, so that brings us to the next question. They failed so far, because I don't think they're done with it yet, on the replacement and repeal and replacement of Obamacare, but now they're coming up with taxes and a question as to whether or not we're going to have a tax revolution, and they are appealing to people's baser instincts. Hey, you don't want to pay taxes? That's different from Obamacare, where you're going to take something away.
Yeah, no. And I think no sooner is one, you know, cliffhanger, you know, put aside than we start all over again. I think it was the next day the tax proposal was put forward. And I think it's going to have the kind of, you know, similar bitter battle that we saw with healthcare, because my reading of it right now, and correct me if you have a different impression, is they're sort of going down the same strategy. It's a very partisan, divisive kind of action. They're not reaching out. I think John McCain said it in ways that certainly the public would applaud and support. He says we need to do things in a more bipartisan way. Now, that's easy to say. It's much harder to pull off, and people have had difficulty pulling that off. I think you have to go back to Bill Clinton's. Some of his proposals ultimately had cross-party support, but Barack Obama had difficulty doing that, and certainly Donald Trump is even trying less to do that. And so healthcare and now tax reform, the strategy seems to be we're going to push the envelope as hard as we can in a, you know, conservative direction and sort of hope that they squeeze out the votes. But there is inconsistencies between what he said on the campaign and what seems to be in some of these proposals that are coming forth in terms of things he said, campaign promises, and then the reality, which gets back to your initial point, which was, you know, just how much honest and how truthful are people taking him. And the numbers for that, of course, are quite low.
Dismal. I want to ask you real quickly about a constitutional convention. Mm-hmm. My friend Jerry Benjamin at New Paltz, yep, and so many others are saying, you know, there really is a swamp in Albany, and we can change that with a constitutional convention. Except that there are those of us who think, hey, yeah, if they took it seriously and they really wanted to make change, but I don't see that as a real possibility, so I'm on the fence on this. What are the voters thinking?
We haven't asked that specifically. You know, change is, seems to be a good thing until you get into the weeds and start looking at the specifics. And I think people, you know, we've had so many change elections and so many, you know, so much advocacy of moving in different directions because people think we're headed both in New York and nationally on the wrong track. There's a sort of a welcome mat for moving in a different direction. I'm not sure a constitutional convention, although it has its merits, I'm not sure at this point until there's a specific element attached to it about what will be changed that is going to get a big support. What is the kind of vote that's needed to even call a convention in New York?
Well, it's going to be on the ballot. You need a positive outcome in, yeah, order for it to happen. It happens every 20 years. I'm so old, Lee, that I've lived through them before. And, you know, these guys, they get elected or they get their buddies elected. And basically, the same people who are running the legislature are running the Constitutional Convention. Now, my friends, mm-hmm, like Jerry Benjamin and other people are saying, not this time. Well, we'll, mm-hmm, see. Mm-hmm.
I remember in the national, after the presidential election, people said, well, you know, what's the Electoral College going to do? And then they realized the Electoral College was just a rubber stamp of the support in each state, although obviously it was originated to be kind of like a correction on a mistake that the electorate might have made. So, yeah, so it's hard. It's hard. I respect those who are trying to move the argument forward, but I think it's going to have a specific reforms associated with it other than draining the swamp in Albany, which obviously could use that as well.
Lee Marengoff, real last question, and that is, does anybody know who Attorney General Schneiderman is?
They will, because my guess is that he will become, because of what the Trump team has potentially done, allegedly done. A lot of that occurred in New York, and I think that if in any way that Mueller is relieved of some of his responsibilities, Attorney General Schneiderman will then be playing a bigger role in, and should Andrew Cuomo move on to bigger and better things, I think Schneiderman sort of, you know, likes the word governor and New York State number one on his license plate as well. So I think we're going to, you know, hear a little bit more about him in the future. But I would, in the closing minutes, because we were talking before the program, and I want to congratulate you. You always say nice things about me, so I'm going to flip it to you. And I'm going to say that you have built and maintained and expanded and been a voice for wonderful things, you know, from politics to culture to Pete Seeger and the like. And, you know, I think the community, you know, in a sense, for your longevity and continued energy that you're putting into this, into the program. Wow, that's really some track record, Mr. Chartok.
And once again, how do you get your podcast?
Oh, yes, just go to maristpoll.com, and then you'll go to a podcast and then follow away, or you can just, you know, however you go find your normal podcast, however you do that through iTunes or whatever, you can go there and find it, and just get skinny on some of our polls and what makes them what they are.
We are out of time. Our guest has been the fabulous, great Dr. Lee Marengoff, professor in the political science department and director of Marist Institute of Public Opinion for the well-known Marist Poll. Lee, thanks so much for joining us. We are flattered. We knew you when, but now you can't turn on the national news and without hearing about you and your wonderful poll. Thanks so much for being with us. We look forward to our next conversation.
Thank you, Al.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.